Oh, hello, wonderful listeners. It's episode 82 of Rack Addicts After Hours, of course, your favourite podcast in the world that pertains to music, technology, and other such things. We've got four whole people here today to speak at you about those subjects. We've got Telmo, we've got Luke, my name is Ben, and Pete is with me as well. And we always start with a weekly update. And Telmo, you weren't here last time, so you're the freshest face. Take it away. What have you been up to? Any P-gypt-shaped rumblings, potentially?
Hello, boys. Yes, absolutely. What we have is a couple of singles coming out soon. One of them has been on social media. We are doing a remix of our latest single, Sweet Grumpy and Careless, in collaboration with Bauer, a producer from Plymouth, which very much is doing a fantastic job just getting it into a different sort of reality, really. And it sounds wicked, and I really hope you guys can tune in once it gets out. The other one is an announcement that I would like to make. We've got another single that will be coming out at the end of next month, and this single is called Blindfold. You've heard it here first. It's a song that's been on the works. It's been about 10 years, actually. Can you believe it?
Yes, I can believe it.
Yeah, you can believe it.
Pete knows how that one goes.
Yeah, so we're really excited about this one, simply because it's sort of like a different statement that we're trying to provoke here, and it shows a different direction for P-Gypt, so stay tuned for that. That's my business news. In terms of life news, I'm getting a DX7 next week.
Good man. Mm. That's quite a keyboard selection you've got. I mean, there's three, isn't it? So you've got the Reface CS.
That's right.
Yep. Classic, portable, versatile,
yep.
Delicious in every way.
So good.
Then which style of electromechanical piano was it? Because I keep getting it wrong.
I've got a Hohner Pianet T from the early 60s. So
it's nice. Vibey. And then a DX7. That's quite a trio.
Yeah.
Pretty unorthodox, but awesome.
I just can't wait. I mean, I've always wanted to get into FM synthesis, and the DX7 really, not only it's super cool, it's got this sort of vintage vibe to it, and Top Gun was written with the DX7, so what else can you want?
Oh, yes.
So Danger Zone, all of those hits, they all have a DX7, so if you want a boogie, you got to get the googie.
If you need DX7 lessons, if you feel like jumping down the programming rabbit hole, I'm sure you can borrow Akira from the ModCaf.
Oh, awesome. I'll definitely get in touch. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's for me. And
DX7 time. It's your turn, Luke. Take it away. What have you been doing?
Trying to mow the lawn in 30-degree heat and failing.
No.
My Flymo flies no longer.
What? Did it overheat and just implode?
I don't know. I think so. I checked the fuse. It just got to the point where, you know how lawnmowers, you squeeze the triggers and you press the button, there's a satisfying click and it whirs into life. It was having none of that. Just to the phrases, like pulling a trigger on an empty gun, just click, 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 click.
No.
I was like, please, please just run. So I've got kind of like a disaster haircut on the back lawn at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like those TikTok videos where people pretend to shave their head and they actually do it by accident and they end up with a reverse Mohican. That's kind of what I've got at the moment in the back garden.
That's
so
fantastic.
That needs to be sorted out. Otherwise, I've been trying not to buy... In fact, I haven't bought it because you can't buy them. Trying not to buy, or rather reserve, a Steam Deck, which is the new portable gaming PC coming from Valve, which looks very exciting.
So is it a laptop?
No, so it looks like a Switch, a Nintendo Switch.
Right.
But it runs SteamOS, runs your Steam account, so you can move any games across from your computer onto the built-in storage. It's got a 7-inch 720p screen on it. It can run most AAA games, I think, at whatever resolution it would be on that screen, and how I think it can also handle ray tracing to an extent, but it runs it on the AMD Radeon software that it has built into it. It's got a new Radeon and a new AMD chip.
What do they call them? The APUs or something?
Yes. GPUs?
They used to, anyway.
I think it's an APU because it's a built-in one. I'm not sure.
Yeah, right. I think the APU is their like combined thing. So like Intel did their Iris integrated graphics, whatever it is, the AMD answer. And I think they were pretty much always considerably better for small portable gaming things.
Yes, and so this sort of takes that to the next logical extreme, latest technology, all that stuff. It's got a 256GB built-in NVMe solid-state drive, which you can download all of your games onto. You can also expand that with an SD card, and it will run anything you play via a cloud save, so you can be playing wherever you are. Save the game, go home, turn on your computer, continue the game from there on your PC. It will just bring the save over. It just sounds really exciting. They are due for release in 2022, probably. It says anything from December to the second quarter of 2022. The reservation fee is like £4, but the overall price is actually more than that. But they are quite exciting looking, and I'm considering saving up for one. Mm. Well, I put my £4 down anyway, my nickel. Yeah. So we'll see what fortunes 2021 brings and whether we can save up for one or not.
Nice one. You can probably do all the different forms of Valve gaming. So you've got game streaming and then cloud save, so desktop and mobile.
Yeah, it looks really exciting.
All the options.
So I'm quite looking forward to that.
Pretty cool. I zoned out. How big's the screen?
7 inches. So fairly big for the kind of device you're looking at. Mm. Really exciting. It's got two analog sticks, two mouse touch pads, and it's got grip controls like a VR controller on the back. So there's loads of things you can assign, all of them using Steam input, which is their own key binding software and stuff. So really well thought out, I think.
Good stuff.
There were some commentators on the VR side of things that were suggesting that it may be feasible to run VR from it.
I wouldn't be surprised. It seems very powerful.
The comment from Steam was that that's not how they envisage it being used and hadn't designed it for that, but they didn't deny that it wouldn't be feasible.
Well, I saw a Tech Insider video where they were playing it as though it was a computer. They docked it and put it attached to a screen, and they were playing on a 1440p monitor with a mouse and keyboard, running the games on the Steam Deck.
It's not half bad.
Yeah, so it's pretty
cool. Those are big boy resolutions. Mm. Especially
I don't know what graphical settings they were on.
But it worked, at least.
Yeah, it worked.
Nice one.
So that's me, really.
Do let us know if and when there is news.
I will.
Excellent. Pete. Oh, Pete. Are you holding an order confirmation?
Yes, I am.
From a certain music shop.
I ran with your recommendation, so ooh, I actually did that just before you gentlemen arrived. I've ordered the RYK M185.
I don't know, because I know it visually, but I never remember what it's called because it's so horribly unmemorable.
It doesn't sound like a microphone stand.
Yeah,
so
I mean, there's nothing really difficult on it. I don't think there's even an LED screen on it at all.
No screen. We like
those
screens.
So, as you've described, effectively, it's the predecessor to the
Metropolis.
The Metropolis.
That's the one. So, as far as I remember, this is made by the original designer who made one for the original Roland System 100 format.
Which
I
they
think.
Still sell.
Yeah, and then IntelliGel thought, oh, that's cool. Can we release Metropolis under license for your design? He's like, yeah, cool. Then Metropolix turned up. Metropolix turned up after this DIY version, which still has two tracks on it, actually, which is pretty cool, independent tracks.
There seems to be some subtle differences, so I don't know if the IntelliGel guys sort of tweaked it to suit their own needs or so forth. Even the original Metropolis has got an LCD readout, and I don't believe this has at all. It's very mechanical, and that's why I quite like it, because I had been looking at a few other bits and pieces, and I've actually gone for the kit version, because you can buy it as a kit or fully assembled.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's £420 assembled, 265 kit.
And the kit isn't that onerous from what I could see. There's nothing too difficult on there.
No, I mean, the parts are certainly big. Well, they're not massive, but then it's nothing surface mount, so it looks doable. I mean, it's been on my radar for ages as well.
And I've been having a lot of fun with my Metropolis in the process of testing all the new black coloured units that are going into the live case. And I'm thinking, well, either I have to get a black faceplate for my Metropolis to put it in, or get one of these. And in fact, I've gone for one of these because of its simplicity. Mm-hmm. In the operation, it's all switches and sliders and potentiometers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I quite like the way they've shown the gate modes on this one. There's more gate modes than you have on the Metropolis as well.
And there's two parts or two sequences simultaneously, so which is more than the Metropolis does.
It's super cool. So yeah, the M185 from RYK Modular.
Yes.
Nice one. I'll definitely need to see how it goes. Like I said,
well,
it's on
I'm
my
expecting
list.
To get the kit by the end of the week. I'm not sure if I'm going to be quite keen to build it. So
it'll jump the queue that's on your desk.
Yes, there's so many kits sort of piled up in the workshop at the moment, but I just haven't felt the impetus to actually get them done.
How much of your base constraints, your 208 HP, is now full?
I would say that I'm 2/3 there, possibly.
Ooh, quite quick. Well, I do have some news that might be relevant for the portable case building. It is my very great pleasure to announce that the Modular Cafe shall return.
Woo!
Yay! We've got a venue, a new venue in Ash, a brewery, the Lion Brewery, or is it the Lions Brewery?
What a great place to do a mod cafe.
Yeah, I was about to say, a brewery makes it even better.
Yeah, it'll be great. We've got...
It's nearer for me.
Oh, excellent. Well, we've got beer ready to go. It's smaller, so we'll have to figure out what we want to do in terms of numbers and things, but it's going to happen.
So what facilities have they got there?
Beer.
Okay, other than beer.
It's just a free function room, basically, but we've got PA that we can bring and mixing desks, so we can have everything we need.
Well, I'm all geared up to bring my own PA.
Yes, of course. Your double Bose S1 Pro.
So I was thinking, like, surrounded by barrels, or what are you thinking?
I've got a picture of the room. Wooden floors, pub-style seating. We've got kind of leathery bench bit around one corner wall. There is a TV if somebody wants to turn up and do video synthesis. Yes, please. Smallish, nice raftery, vaulted ceilingy looking stuff. We'll see how we go, but we've got very positive feedback. Direct train from Reading, especially if beer is involved, says one of our members. So yeah, it's going to be good.
I think the Reading line's there because I think you can get it in things like Blackwater. And
no idea, but we need to find out who's going to be doing the live performances. So Pete, how ready are you?
Not very. I'm a few modules out at the moment. I might be to rust or something else up.
4th of August.
Yeah, might have to do something, at least a demonstration. I'll have a think about it. I'll let you know
even
in the next
just a quick show off of the stochastic inspiration generator, I'm sure would be appreciated by
me. I need a case to have it all in. I can't sort of bring baskets of loose modules. Although that might be quite amusing.
Yeah, bring some sarcastic inspiration.
Okay, so that's going to happen. It's going to be great. I'm excited, and we'll report back once it's happened. And we do need sarcastic musicians to turn up as well if we have numbers. I think it'd be quite cool to bring both halves of P-Gypt along one day.
I would love to do that.
Demonstrate some weird implementations of traditional, in inverted commas, instruments alongside the weird and wonderful synthy boy times.
That's a great idea.
You in?
I will get my DX7, I will get my pocket operator, probably my CS altogether, and I'll see what I can do with a loop.
Could you bring the pianette as well? Because contact mics are our friends.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll have to get some help putting it in the car, because that thing is bloody heavy.
Yeah.
But I'll get it done.
Yeah. We should be returning to our proper home at the West End Centre as well. At some point, but that doesn't actually have a date on it. We've been told that we can come back.
What's the story there? Have they reopened in some capacity? But they're just
They tend to be doing one event only per evening.
So no mingling events.
Exactly, and that was how we kind of survived. So once they say, you can just get stuck in.
Yeah, I see the premise, yes.
And we'll be there.
Well, that's quite exciting news.
Very. I'm very excited. I also may be doing a bit of a long-term loan from Akira, actually borrowing their case, CV bus case. So that means the Lyra that you played with a while ago, Telmo, that's already got somebody interested on the Facebook Marketplace.
I've seen it. I know. Yep. I saw it yesterday.
It's going, and
it's so much fun to play with it, honestly. It's such a nice piece of kit. It's very intuitive. For those who just like thinking about getting one or just aren't mildly interesting in the unit. I mean, from a guy that doesn't own a lot of synths, I mean, comparing to you guys, I think it's a great, just a start into something that's wacky.
It is really cool.
Do you think a drummer could play one?
I'll miss it.
Yeah,
okay.
Totally.
Actually, Luke, my favourite thing about
this
is...
I have no rhythm and I can play it.
That's not true.
Even if you're a musician or you're a synth nerd, no matter how advanced you think you may be, nobody has any advantage over anybody else in trying to make it do what you want, because it's just so weird.
Good, because what did you say? Synth operator and musician, both of those terms don't really apply to me.
Synth operator, musician, drummers will be perfectly happy.
Hooray.
While you don't hit it, there is no mechanical prerequisites for making sounds out of it.
Can I hit it?
Well, it's made in Russia, so you could throw it off a building, it'd be fine.
Yeah, man.
They're amazing. You could kill people with them.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But yeah, I will miss it, but I think I need to modular again.
I'm always in awe of the transitory nature of your instrument possession, i.e. the period of ownership. It's very brief.
Yeah.
A lot of these things.
I think modular did that, really. It's so easy to sell things and so quick to find buyers on Facebook that it was just so easy to turn things around.
Ah, you're a hustler. Buying and selling, wheeling and dealing.
Well, there's no profit
ducking
at all.
Ducking and diving.
But yeah, it moves fast. I move the product quickly.
Well, I suppose it gives you an opportunity to try try these things and decide whether you actually like it.
With minimal loss as well compared to some instruments.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't end up getting that attached to many things, apart from the Euclidean circles. I miss it.
You've indicated that the modular might be making an appearance soon then.
It will. It's happening.
Sort of got any thoughts about what you'll acquire this time round?
Yeah, so Plinky is good. We'll be going in the rack to interact with the first module or modules. I think a form of clouds is first. So either beads, either clouds, or a monsoon, typhoon, something like that.
Okay.
To ambientize, just because that's fun.
I have
fun.
Been contemplating a monsoon this week.
After that, I'll get back on the DIY train, probably something like radio music. An output module.
I think radio music's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It's brilliant. I love it. Just simple. Does what you want.
Oh, on that note, I had been thinking about doing some field recording.
Yeah.
Sort of remembering the heady days of the pre-pandemic Britain, when you could go anywhere and...
Do anything
virtually. And I thought I'd just have a shifty around in my archives, and I actually found one of the many days out where I've done the whole recording from the train journey up to Waterloo, then on to various other destinations around London, culminating in finishing up at the British Museum, and it's all there.
So nice.
I'm going to go through and edit up properly so that it's like a sound library of all the best.
That'd be really
cool.
So
going
Love
from sort of interesting train noises with pneumatic doors opening and closing, the wonderful reverb in the atrium at Waterloo Station, also the wonderful reverb, even better reverb, in the courtyard that's now covered at the British Museum.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got all those. I went through all the files.
So it wasn't one big, long recording? No, you went and stopped at various
bits. Been stopped on occasions.
Cool.
So I've labelled up all the master files, so I know exactly where they are. So one will be train to Waterloo, another one will be Waterloo, so forth. And then I'm going to get them all into Cubase and really pare them down so that I've got some really nice stuff, and then load it all into the radio music.
Nice one. What I like to do with mine, which were mostly just the weather, is I'd always chop them so that you can loop them really easily, so that you don't have to worry about resetting it.
So there's no weird bumps or anything. They're quite smooth. Yes.
Find your zero crossings and hope for the best.
Yeah, that would be the logical thing to do. Yeah, so I'm going to do that. So I'm quite pleased that I found that.
Right, I think we've got some synth news a-rumbling. I hope you don't mind, gentlemen over there, who
please
might be getting bored
indulge
of the synthy
me.
Stuff, but that's our bread and butter. One bit to add before we jump into the prepared stuff. Welcome back to Behringer Watch, or something. Yeah, before we jump into the slightly more interesting one, they've teased an SH5, Roland SH5 knockoff in the same Poly-D chassis that you know and love, Pete.
I'm just trying to think what the SH5, is it the little one? One of the really small plastic ones that Roland used to do.
This, I'm just going to turn the laptop around for the picture, that might jog your memory of it. There you go, there's the thing.
Okay, mid-1970s, I think.
76.
Yeah, and that's sort of big, a mid enough for me.
Yeah, big fat mono.
Yeah, that would have been quite an expensive beastie in its day.
Most likely, and even more expensive now.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
Not at all. So, yeah, Poly-D enclosure, looks the part, probably sound fine, probably break as soon as you look at it. What's next on Behringer Watch? Slightly more interesting, this one. Many people will know the Polyvox. Even people outside synth circles who are a fan of Mick Gordon and the Doom soundtrack may know the Polyvox. It's an old Russian synthy chap. Was it based on something, or was it just quite an original design at the time? I don't know much about it, to be honest.
No, because it was behind the Iron Curtain when it was developed, so I think there's a lot of originality there, to be honest.
Well, the designer, I assume it's the original designer, Vladimir Kuzmin, I'll probably have butchered his name, I'm sorry, has stated, "With great interest, I have followed Behringer's vision to bring back iconic synthesizers and make them affordable for musicians. For all my life, I have been extremely passionate about synthesizers, and I decided to contact Uli to see if Behringer would be interested to design a new Polyvox, as I would love to see my legacy live on." Dangerous. Dangerous stuff, I think. We'll see. I hope it's up to the quality that he ends up expecting, because that's some big words there. I would love to see my legacy live on. Don't know about you guys, but I wouldn't be trusting Uli Behringer with my synth legacy that spans decades.
I was going to make some comment along those lines, but I thought better of it, but never mind.
Well,
must be a very desperate legacy.
If let's be optimistic, it could go the way of the Neutron and the DeepMind. It could be another classic. I won't say I'm hopeful.
Hey, you know, what is it they say? Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
I mean, it could be done right, depending how much influence Vladimir has.
Hopefully he gets to work with a lot of the old Midas people, because they seem to be the good bit of Behringer's stuff.
There's quite a few other, I'm assuming, collaborations, because there's many modules that you can get that claim to be based or utilize the Polyvox name. You've got the Harvestman stuff. In fact, I've got one of the Harvestman Polyvox filters.
Yeah, back when it was Harvestman, which is a much better name than Industrial Music Electronics.
And also...
Erica do some.
Yes, I was going to say that. And I assume the fact they're using the name so boldly in the title, or those were under license or some sort of collaboration, or certainly had the...
Or at least they got
the blessing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what is the sound of the Polyvox to you? Because I don't know that I've done that much digging. I think it's kind of quite round, quite dirty, and potentially a bit weird, but that's...
Well, it does go on to state that based on actual experience, that some of the designs made it a very unique sounding synth.
So is there anything that Behringer hasn't done that is popular? We're talking about...
really big obvious ones. Well, they haven't done DX7 alike, have they? Because they've been confining it to the analog, apart from Brains.
I mean, the DX7 could be difficult. Yamaha still market it, and Yamaha's a big company. They could be all over Behringer with that.
That's a good point.
They could be.
I don't think they're necessarily going to go there. I mean, obviously, other people have done FM,
but Korg Op6 is quite obviously so DX7 inspired.
Personally, I think they will avoid that type of thing. But I have seen pictures of the PPG wave. Got waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that. Actually,
I mean, there seems to be almost nothing they won't attempt.
No. Yeah, it's a matter of what are they going to do, what haven't they done, it's just when.
Seems like there's still a lot of territory in terms of analog to still work on.
I want them to try and take on the Nifonium or the Nifonium, which I think I mentioned on a really old podcast, which is an all-valve monosynth that goes for something like $20,000 when they bother to make them.
Wow.
And they look incredible.
Imagine the amount of Smarties I could buy with that.
You could fill a swimming pool. Probably several.
Yes. Most likely.
So was there any intention to do a Jupiter 8 alike?
I can't recall any whisperings, but I imagine they probably will at some point. I mean, they're CS80 first, which I guess is a bit more complex because of the poly aftertouch stuff.
What's next? The Juno.
Well, they did that with the DeepMind ages ago. It's not actually a clone, but it's heavily inspired by and sounds very similar.
Yeah, it's got a screen and all of that, but it's not really the copy of the Juno that...
Yeah, but they don't need to because they've got it. Yeah.
Never know.
Well, slightly tangent to that, I was going to say, I'm starting to get the hots for the UDO.
Ooh.
Yes, I
thought you would.
I know. It's on a, it's...
Did you play with a few at
work? No, it's just pricked my attention. I've watched a few videos, or re-watched a few videos, I should have said, and suddenly I'm thinking, oh, I mean, I have played with one, but it was broken. That's generally when I get to play with synths. It's generally when they're broken and I'm trying to work out
Pete,
how
why
broken.
Doesn't it work?
Yeah, or, you know, are we going to send this back to the manufacturer, was it just the end user that couldn't work it properly?
Often the case.
You know, quite often they are broken. This one was definitely broken. It was doing a weird thing. Every time you trigger the sixth voice, it did a weird thing. Couldn't really describe it.
Had a synth spasm.
Yes, and it was regular and every time. So you'd hit six notes and every sixth note kind of distorted and went all strange. And I suppose it's the fact they're digital oscillators. So it must have been a software thing, possibly, or maybe a phone.
Analog filters and VCAs, I think.
Yes, and I went back to the Sonic State video today where they're really explaining the idea and fundamental rationale and how it was designed. Because it's a synth that's taken a long time to get together from I was watching the other gentleman that's very friendly with Sonic State, Gaz
Williams,
yes,
with the hair and the buckets of enthusiasm,
certainly, and he was very enthusiastic. He did a live stream a couple of days ago and he's just acquired one, a blue one.
Oh, nice.
And he was explaining the long history he has he's very familiar with the designer of the synth.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd seen some of the prototype work literally on breadboards, sort of spread across a workbench. And apparently it's been going for some time.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't realised it's sort of based, in some respects, on the Jupiter 6.
Ah, I had no idea.
Well, there's an element of that. Obviously, the Jupiter 6 had analog oscillators and so forth. But the idea that everything is very tactile, so it's obviously got the big buttons and sliders, and the idea that not only the keyboard is a facet of the musical instrument in the respect of musicality and performance, all the control surfaces as well.
Yeah, definitely. He makes a big point about that when he demos it. He sort of designed it so that the programming was part of the performance.
And he did a very good explanation of the binaural system. So I hadn't really realised, he was explaining how many polyphonic stereo synthesizers aren't at their core essentially stereo. The oscillators are mono, and they only become stereo as you modulate through the signal path, and that produces, you may be having something phasing from left to right, or there's some other effects, and that's what creates a stereo image. But his is truly stereo right from the oscillators onwards,
right?
And that creates all sorts of strains, so that you have slightly inconsistencies between the oscillators, and they're accentuated by filtering and other processing.
Nice one. I haven't spent quality time with it, but I've definitely...
That's the same thing that happens with guitars, by the way, because if you have a stereo out straight out of the guitar, like Gibson used to do back in the 60s, well, up and especially in the 60s, with the 345s and the stereo imaging, that's completely different than having an ABY or just two amps receiving the same signal, if you see what I mean.
Totally. How would they do that? Did they have, like, three of the strings go down one? Because I remember there was one company... No, it wasn't a company, wasn't it? Like, a band that recorded each string of the guitar separately or something stupid like that.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
That rings a bell. I don't know who... I've definitely heard that story.
I'll Google it now. Tell me, actually, one thing we haven't had in ages is any kind of guitarish news, any of the tangential music industry stuff. Anything excited you, caught your eye recently?
Well, I believe last time I've talked about Jackson's new modular fuzz pedals. That's really still very interesting, still being talked. There's some good things coming out from NAMM 2021. Fender is releasing a Corey Wong signature guitar.
Oh, cool.
Which, that's pretty cool. It's just your regular strap, but this one comes with a slightly shorter scale. An exciting one for grunge fans, the Kurt Cobain Jag Stand. It's a very much a shape that's been wanted to be reissued by Fender a long time ago. And finally, it's out. So it's this weird sort of mix between a Mustang and a Jaguar.
A Jagstang.
A Jagstang, popularized by the one and only.
I guess that means that the Wolfpack guys are out of obscurity now.
Officially, if they got Fender stuff going on.
They do.
They're no longer that hipster band.
They've had Music Man stuff as well with Joe Dart.
I heard about that.
That is a brilliant bass video, actually.
I haven't seen it.
But the thing is that...
Vlance Arm Strength.
Yes.
Oh, yes, that one.
Yes.
No more government subsidies for active basses. Or whatever the line is.
It's a great line. The thing is that Joe Dart's always been, since the beginning of the Wolfpack, he's always been in the forefront of bass playing. But Corey Wong kind of showed up a little bit when they were already picking up in terms of popularity. So I think Corey Wong's a little bit offset from whatever Wolfpack is doing. He kind of shows up and rips up a few funky licks and then goes
he's
back to...
He's very good at those funky licks.
Yeah, man.
Oh, he be. Right.
But yeah. That's all I know so far.
Lovely stuff. Okay, you know what happens when we go from Wolfpack straight into segways, marshmallows, backpacks, skateboard. It's time for
Luke's Spacey Bit.
Whenever there's no inspiration, just go for random words as a segue. That'll do.
I enjoyed that. Lovely. I liked many of those things. So we have two fairly short things today. We have had the launch of Blue Origin's new Shepard spacecraft.
Shepard's Pie.
Shepard's Pie.
I've watched it today.
Yes. How did you find it? Did you enjoy it?
I skipped out on... I didn't see it live.
Okay.
But there was a complete thing of the live stream, and so I just watched the launch and then the descent and then cut out, because there was a lot of inane discussion about all
there
sorts
was.
Of stuff to do with stock exchange. I watched it. Did anyone else watch it?
No, I don't know what it is.
So
Luke, help me.
That's what we're here for.
Hooray!
So I managed to tune in at T-minus 12 minutes, I think, so I caught some of the commentary and then the launch itself. So New Shepard is Blue Origin being Amazon's private space company, essentially SpaceX but run by Bezos rather than Musk. Similar sort of thing.
Pick your team now.
Indeed. And they launched a vehicle called New Shepard, which is their reusable, or believe it's reusable. I need to double check that, actually. But it's at least partially reusable, and it's a self-landing booster as well, much like a la Falcon 9 and all the SpaceX stuff that they have these days. So the New Shepard is described as a crew-rated suborbital launch vehicle developed as a commercial system for space tourism. It's named after Alan Shepard, who was one of the first NASA astronauts. He was from the Mercury 7 crew, one of the first crewed space flight missions. It is designed to go up to approximately 100 kilometers, which is 62 miles or 330,000 feet above the surface of the Earth, breaching the Kármán line, which we talked about previously.
Episode 81. Check it out now.
Defined as the boundary between space and the atmosphere, mostly because that's where gravity kind of becomes the principal issue as opposed to air resistance or lift. There was a lot of talking about the Kármán line in the commentation for the launch today. I think they were kind of trying to rub it in their live broadcast that it was definitely something they'd got past. It was further than the Virgin Galactic spaceship. It was quite petty. But nonetheless, New Shepard launched. It looked very cool. It came up to its designated height. There was a separation event. The capsule went off up to apogee, which would be the 100 kilometers. The booster sort of fell back down behind that and landed autonomously, which is really cool to watch. It's very smooth, very slick. It has these four little fins on the outside that are controlled by hydraulics, liquid hydrogen and oxygen engine. This is very small, but it works. It does what it is. It's essentially about a 5-minute journey, though. I don't know if I'd pay what they pay for.
I believe some of the people have bid millions to go up.
That must have been the fastest Amazon delivery ever.
I mean, it couldn't be more than 10 minutes altogether, the ascent and the descent.
Yeah, I think it was about 9 minutes 40 on the clock.
Very slick, though. Very.
Yeah. It worked perfectly. So you can't fault them for that. But I'm not sure if I'd pay that much money for 90 seconds of freefall.
No. Rack Addict After Hours is not sponsored by Amazon Prime Space.
I've heard what they were saying. They're very secretive about everything. They're not as open as SpaceX or even as much as Virgin. And I note there was no cameras, or certainly not for the broadcast, there was no cameras inside the capsule.
Yeah, that may resurface. Perhaps that was intentional because, you know, it was the first time they'd done this. Who knows?
I think it was being filmed in quite a high-definition way for a later broadcast as a complete programme about the whole event.
It probably will be in PR side of it. Of course, that's a big win for their company. Private space ventures is one of those things where we have this issue of could these funds be spent better elsewhere? You've got your billionaires essentially playing with resources that could be better preserved. We don't live in that world. These resources are being spent on space. So for me, the upshot is I'm happy for the engineers that work in these companies have built these things that go up into space and do the challenges.
Apart from that, I think it's a great thing. I mean, technology and giving human value to those engineers, it's very cruel to our development as a society.
Yeah, and it's something that humans have done. We've done it now. They built another spaceship that isn't government-backed, and that's interesting. It points towards what the future might be. Who knows? So that was a successful launch for Blue Origin, their first crewed mission. The other quick bit of news I wanted to bring to your attention was Hubble is back. It is working.
Good news.
It is not broken.
Hang on, which one is Hubble?
Hubble is a space telescope that sits in low Earth orbit. It has taken some of the most impressive pictures. On a previous episode, I did a little experiment with us all where I asked you to look at a picture called the Hubble Deep Field, which was a picture taken of a black spot in the night sky. They left it there for ages, and when they enlarged it, or rather when they brought it into focus, it revealed millions of galaxies that were further away than we could ever see before.
That's amazing.
So it's just one of those really useful tools. It is the most utilized telescope we have at the moment, and point of it being in orbit is it gets above the atmosphere so it can see stuff more clearly. But it had broken for a bit, as we covered last week. Now, I struggled to get a precise definition for what the error was. It appears to be something to do with the power control unit that ran a series of computers that had to do with the payload system, the payload computers. So those are instruments that do scientific bits and pieces on site on the telescope. They managed to fix it by changing to backup systems, backup hardware that's on the telescope that hadn't been powered on since it was launched. These are redundant systems. So it was a bit odd and difficult for them, and they had to bring in some alumni staff. Like when coronavirus hit, they brought in doctors that had retired, brought them back to service to plug the gaps in where people weren't getting treated fast enough. They did exactly the same thing. They brought people that had worked on Hubble in the 80s back into NASA to try and fix this. Apparently they brought themselves in just because they didn't want to see their project die, which is very nice.
That's amazing.
Nice to see people still caring enough to do that. And they eventually had a workaround where they powered on alternative backup redundant systems, and it appears to fix the issue. I think the reason why I couldn't find a precise description of what the issue is, I think they're still trying to work out precisely what the problem was, but the point is it is now running again. They've managed to fix it and is now running on redundant hardware.
I remember a while ago when, actually multiple years, when we seemed to be losing celebrities all over the place, around when Alan Rickman passed away, I was asking people, which is the celebrity that will break you if we lose them? So for you, is it the Hubble Space Telescope? If we lose the Hubble, Luke's just not going to come out of his room for weeks.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's already come out with new images, and they are of some very far-off and interesting Southern Hemisphere galaxies that have these huge, out-of-balance, out-of-kind-of-symmetry spiral arms. Like, it's like they've been teased out, like a bit of cotton wool that's been pulled. And that's just apparently very odd. So there's going to be some papers written about those soon, which is interesting.
Nice.
So it continues to provide. And of course, it means that we have the opportunity to have the best tag team telescope duo in orbit when the James Webb Space Telescope launches eventually, because that was a big worry. If we couldn't use the two together, it was going to hamper a lot of projects and just be very sad, because Hubble was built in the 80s, launched in 1990, and has done so much since.
Yeah.
And if we could have it up there with the JWST, that would be awesome, which hopefully we now can, assuming it doesn't die again. But yes, that's that, really. So Hubble is back in action and is taking new photos already. You can find those on the NASA website. I think they were released on the 19th of July. So there you have it.
Nice one. Lovely stuff. Always good to have our spacey bits live so we can learn. Hooray! That means it's time for the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation that we always close out our podcast with. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy some of these little bits that we've got for you, maybe to brighten up your week if you're also in England and stuck inside, melting slowly, and you just need something to take your mind off your slowly dissolving flesh. Who'd like to go first? Anybody? Oh, Pete's frantically YouTubing. Telmo, you got anything ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Fire away, because I totally don't.
Awesome. So this week I've been doing loads of reading, so I had to kind of like dig in a little bit to see if I could find anything relevant for our lovely listeners on YouTube. But I did find something, and that something is a channel called Able in Ableton. This channel will provide you, for those who are intermediate advanced producers and obviously work with Ableton, this channel will provide you with some really useful tips using the YouTube short video.
Oh, YouTube Shorts.
YouTube Shorts.
YouTube's version of stories or
that's
whatever.
That's it.
Because everybody has stories now.
It's quite cool because the videos are less than a minute long and they're very precise. Just imagine if you're looking to how to write a killer MIDI riff with sampler velocity. It gives you a step-by-step ways of doing this. So it's almost like a visual tutorial of how to do these things. It's a very kind of new channel. It only has 7K subscribers. But there is some really cool stuff like loops with Ableton, hack for frozen audio tracks, just all sorts of stuff that could be useful for you. And it certainly was useful for me because I've been doing loads of production stuff recently and this helped. So there we go.
Lovely stuff. What was the channel name again?
Able in Ableton.
Able in Ableton. Excellent.
Able as in A-B-L-E.
Lovely stuff.
Not the name.
I've got another music production one while we're on that kind of theme. I have been looking into various field recording type stuff. Stuffses. Things. Devices. Often you'll be looking at specs. Ooh, what sample rate can this do? What bit depth can it have? There is a video on FabFilter's YouTube channel. We love FabFilter. Some seriously great plugins. It's a video by Dan Worrell called Sample Rates, the Higher the Better. Right? Really, really cool demo. So it's showing different kinds of plugins, obviously all FabFilter because it's product placement and all that, but it's great. Talking about what kind of sample rate you might want to record in, how that will impact your plugins and such. For example, using FabFilter Saturn, their saturation distortion plugin, which I really like, and what kind of effect that has on harmonics at different sample rates. There's a really cool program that has a good a spectral kind of view, which will show in this video as a sine wave sweep, and it's visualized in this particular mode as a line going from bottom left to kind of top right.
Yeah.
When he's in 44.1, kind of goes mostly up to the top right. And as he increases the sample rate, the highest it goes is kind of lower down the graph.
Yeah.
And
so there's more ceiling to play with.
There's more ceiling. That's just so you can visualize it. I definitely recommend everyone watches this. They'll add the saturation and you can see the extra harmonics that are added, right? And on a low sample rate with a lower Nyquist frequency, you have these harmonics reflected back into the audible range and you get these weird artifacts, especially when he was doing some synth stuff and playing with the pitch wheel. It sounded bizarre.
Mm.
And it's a really good demonstration of what aliasing actually sounds like. Then when you increase your sample rate, those reflected harmonics are way above 20K, so it doesn't matter.
That's
so
it's perfect for experimental music, for any sort of music that really it's on the details where the difference is made.
Yeah, and if you're doing something that does use a lot of pure tones and distortion, it's definitely good to know. And he's showing this kind of stuff on drums where you might want to add some saturation and showing how you can use oversampling in plugins. It's pretty boring as a bit of knowledge, like you'd think, oh, sample rates, so bored, but it's delivered really well and I just felt so much more intelligent after watching the video. It's really, really good. So now I'm just going to binge Fab Filter videos.
It's my kind of boring. What's the name again?
So Fab Filter's YouTube channel, but this one is Sample Rates, the higher the better, right?
I think I'm going to steal that saying. That's my kind of boring. I can relate to that.
It's good, yeah. My kind of boring.
I'll often catch myself expanding upon a topic that my partner has no interest in, and I'll be like, no, that's my kind of boring.
Actually, another thing that it may well be your kind of boring, Luke, I watched a video, about half an hour video, about how we polish certain objects to really precise flatnesses.
Oh, yeah.
Which is probably some kind of space mirror related application. So you might find it interesting. I've no idea what it's called, but if I find it, I'll link you to it, because it was
do.
I don't know why I was watching it, because why would I care? But it's fascinating.
The sort of thing that comes on across my YouTube about 2 a.m.
Yeah, it was early, because I couldn't sleep, because it was 32 degrees indoors. Anyway, who's next? Pete, Luke.
I shall go, shall I?
Ah.
So I have an album.
Ooh.
I have an album called Triage by a band called Methyl Ethyl.
Can you spell it?
No.
Damn.
I will, of course, spell it for our listeners. It is Methyl Ethyl. That is MethylEthyl. Methyl Ethyl.
Gotcha.
It is the brainchild of a man named Jake Webb, who was previously in Sugarpuss and other projects. It's a kind of a solo venture, though he does have other musicians in the band for live. Triage is the first album I've heard by them, and it's just got this really nice sound to it. It's odd. Triage was produced solo. It's a bedroom album, much akin to Tame Impala and that sort of type of thing. And it's just got this wonderful sound to it. It's somewhere between sort of surf rock and dance and electronica. Just really, really interesting. Vocals are very well produced. They often have multiple layers and harmonies all coming from the same guy. And the guitars are just really weird, really strange. They'll be obviously processed or going through.
Do they go wibble?
Kind of. Depends on the song. If you want a wibbly guitar sound, I recommend Trip the Mains.
Mm-hmm.
If you want an odd time signature, I recommend Real Tight. It's just got a really pleasant groove to it that it always loops back on a double eight kick drum that just sounds really cool. It comes back around every time. And so you listen to it, you kind of think, oh, it's in 4/4, but on a closer inspection, you're like, oh no, it's not. It's just one of those really
nice
tidy little songs. Yeah. And just every song on the album. Really, Ruiner is great. Trip the Mains is probably my favourite, but it's a toss-up between that and Real Tight. So yeah, I'd recommend Triage by Methyl Ethyl.
Lovely stuff. Pete, take us away to the end of the episode.
Right, another musical one. Seems to be a bit of a musical recommendation week.
Yes,
well, I say musical, music hardware.
Yes.
So we all have our potential favourites. I'm sure all you guys have got favorite YouTubers that do either music or music and hardware, or just hardware, whatever your particular penchant is. I mean, that could be Lollipop, Cuckoo.
Andrew Huang.
Red Means Record. You know, there's a variety of them, even Ricky Tenez, any of these. One that you may or may not have come across before is called Noir et Blanc V. Translates to black and white life.
I did wonder, but never looked it up.
The description just says, life isn't always black and white. And it goes on to say, keyboardist, videographer, founder of MM. I don't know what MM is.
Who knows?
This gentleman has been on YouTube for over a decade, and he claims to do a video every Tuesday. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but that's in his banner. Anyway, generally, it is very synthy, and he can be either discussing equipment he's bought or reviewing equipment or just talking about various bits of functionality. And there's a fair bit of standard synthesizers and quite a lot of modular as well. The videography is quite good. It's got a good aesthetic to it, which is always nice when you see someone's put the effort in.
Mm.
And there's a slight, I wouldn't say whimsical. I would say the closest that I would give it as an analogy would be Ricky Tenez.
Yeah.
In the sort of, with the video style, the style of the channel. But yeah, so that would be my recommendation for this week. Pretty straightforward. Noir et Blanc V. Most probably hashing that up, but for those who need to understand how that's spelled, it's NoirEtBlancVie.
Is that French?
Yes.
Noir et Blanc V.
Yeah. Ah. There you go. Telmo's pronounced it properly. As Telmo, he's
the best
worked,
equipped to
lived
do
and
a French
worked in
accent.
France at one stage.
That's right. Yeah. Nice just one. Black and white life, that's what it's called.
Nice.
Excellent. Thank you for saving us from our English butchering of other languages.
That's right, mate. That's all right.
Yeah, we don't do it on purpose, like, but it just happens, you know. Anyway, thank you so very much for listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. Do join us next week. Hopefully, all four of us again. Bye-bye.